Welcome to episode 155 of Your Kids Next Read podcast, in which we talk about books and reading for kids of all ages. I'm Alison Tate, author of middle grade adventure series, The Mapmaker Chronicles, The Atabane Cipher, The Maven and Reeve Mystery Series, and my latest middle grade novel, The First Summer of Callie McGee. I'm here with my co-host, the excited Megan Daly. I don't know why she's excited. I just decided she should be excited this week. Celebrity teacher librarian, author of The Beehive and Raising Readers, and editor of the Teacher Teacher Anthology. Megan and I, along with our good friend author Alison Rushby, are founders of the Your Kids Next Read community on Facebook. Search for Your Kids Next Read there to join us. So, what's occurring in the world of Megan this week?
Well, we have three of our four children involved in Wizard of Oz musical theatre performances, which will take up the entire weekend and involve costume changes and stage makeup and hair that requires bobby pins. But for me, that is still actually better than netball and soccer practice and games, all of which I just don't enjoy them. I try super hard to get.
You don't even try. Let's face it. We've been talking about this for years and you've been saying how much you dislike.
It was so funny. Netball game started last weekend and I went up and chatted to my neighbour, and I was chatting to her and her husband for a bit, and then eventually they just looked at me and I said, "Oh, you're watching this, aren't you? You want to watch the game?" And they're like, "Yeah, that's what people do with these things." And I just, people get really involved. It's just not for me. So anyway, I'm quite excited about the musical theatre weekend, but yeah, and I'm pleased that we are missing netball and soccer. So yeah, that's what's happening for me.
Well, it's like a win-win, right?
Yeah, I think so.
In sporting language, that's what they'd call a win-win, I reckon. Book Boy Junior, everyone will be very happy to hear, survived his overnight hike, is not still shivering on the side of a mountain somewhere, which was great, but he liked it so much, despite the mice running all over his legs all night. Can we just take a moment here? He's sleeping. He's like, "We're under a tarp, Mom. We had a tarp under us and we had a tarp over us, and there was water dripping on my forehead and there was a mouse running all over." Like, it's four of them, you know, squeezed under this tarp in their sleeping bags with this mouse running around. I'm like, how is this fun? Like, what are we doing?
A native mouse.
I don't think he stopped the mouse, you know, long enough to have a discussion. No. So anyway, liked it so much, he's actually planning another one. Ugh. I mean, so I'm sort of walking around muttering about how nice a warm bed is, but he is not deterred. And worse, has begun buying his own gear. So he's gone out and bought himself some, you know, proper hiking boots, and he's got himself a, you know, down to -2 sleeping bag, and he's got, and I'm like, so I think that's it. You know, once he starts paying his own actual money for things, there's no stopping him. And, you know, in the meantime, I went for a 1-hour bushwalk down by the river with a friend of mine, like, you know, and managed to pick up a tick while I was there. So I had to go to the doctor to have said tick removed. And I'm like, "See, this is what happens." And he goes, "Yeah, but look, Mum, I spent 24 hours on the side of a mountain, did not get a tick. You, 1 hour. I think that's about you, not about the bush." I'm like, "Yeah, probably." In other news, I'm also making good progress on my novel. Actually, let me rephrase that. I'm making good progress on my word count. What it looks like when I go back to read the first draft may not be classified as good. But, you know, this is the process, and I have to trust that there will be something useful in there to work with. And, you know, it's a lot safer to stay inside and write than it is to be out there in the bush with the ticks. So, you know, fingers crossed.
It's finally Hive Day. From celebrated teacher, librarian and author Megan Daly and CBCA shortlisted illustrator Max Hamilton comes The Beehive, the latest addition to the Nature Storybook series from Walker Books. This engaging picture book invites young readers into the world of Australia's native bees. Find out more at megandaly.com.au.
All right, Megan Daly. So as we're staying inside, safely out of the way of anything, mice and ticks and things like that, that gives us lots of time to have a look at our book mail. So what have you got for us this week?
First up, I have got a poetry collection, which I love adding them to my school library, but I also love having them at home because the smallest bee wants to be a rock star. And I have introduced him to the wonder of poetry and talked to him at length about how poetry is, you know, like songwriting, and he really, really enjoys reading collections of poetry. And he has been chuckling away while reading this one as well. It's called Right Way Down and Other Poems. They are chosen by Rebecca Newman and Sally Murphy, who we talked about last week in our verse. Was that last week?
Verse novels. Yeah, I think that was last week.
We're so on theme. So this collection of poetry, I'll read you the blurb. Stand on your head with Sally Murphy, explode some dynamite with Christy Byrne, or shoot some hoops with Cheryl Kickett Tucker. Grow a poet tree with Meg McKinley, or curl up next to your cat with Amber Moffat and watch a bit of Stinkovision with James Foley. These and loads more poems by Australian poets are there to discover in Right Way Down. With striking illustrations by Bryony Stewart, these poems will have you laughing, thinking, and playing with words whichever way you read them. And it is a really beautiful collection. It's got themes of animals and nature. Really great introduction to, you know, that wonder of poetry for a primary school audience. Great illustrations. I'm a massive fan of the work of Bryony Stewart. And as soon as I saw the cover, I recognized her artwork immediately. And it is really beautifully illustrated throughout. I'm going to read you one of the poems I really, really liked and spoke to me. It's called Dumped, and it's by Sally Murphy. Catch a wave, they said. Wait for a big one, then swim like mad. You'll surf in like a pro. So I tried. But instead of catching that wave, the wave caught me. I love that. And it's got this wonderful illustration of a small child being dumped by a wave. And having just been dumped by very many waves on my recent holiday at Agnes Waters, that poem really spoke to me. So I thought I'd read you that one out. My second bit of book mail is actually a collection. Okay. I am a big fan of the Little People Big Dreams series. They are ever popular in my school library, and my own family really like them. I think the teenagers like the look of them. They tend to do a bit of home decorating with the Little People Big Dreams books, but they do all read them as well. And they were very insistent recently that we add the three latest ones to our collection. I've got Little People Big Dreams Beyonce. Mm. Little People Big Dreams, wait for it, drum roll, Taylor Swift.
Dun, dun, dun.
And I have Little People Big Dreams Kylie Minogue, which I was more excited about than my teens. But, you know, I love a bit of Kylie. And the Little People Big Dreams series has been around, as you would know, for quite some time now. I love the sort of narrative nonfiction element to them. They are a nonfiction book, but they've got that beautiful narrative structure as well. There's a timeline at the back. They are all written by Maria Isabel Sanchez Virago, but they've got different illustrators for each one, which I really like. So that each one has a different feel, but they're definitely part of a series. I am sure you all know the books that I am talking about, but I really did want to highlight that we now have Beyonce, Tay-Tay, and Kylie Minogue to add to our collections.
Excellent. Well, we'll all be leaping out. I do love the pop culture aspect of it too, because they've done, you know, so many, like, you know, they've done a lot of artists, and they've done like a whole range of different sorts of, you know, worthy people. And so I love, you know, watching some of these sort of more modern icon pop culture icons coming through as well, which is great. Now, I have got a couple of books to talk about. The first one is a graphic novel, and it's by Christy Byrne, who you mentioned earlier in the poetry collection. So we're doing some very nice sort of, like, you know, reiterating our themes here. It's called Ultraviolet Down to Business, and it's by Christy Byrne, and it's illustrated by Rebel Challenger. And it's a really interesting little book. Now, Christy Byrne is a great science communicator. She writes a lot of, you know, science-based novels and also nonfiction and all sorts of, you know, different things. This is the first time I think she's done a graphic novel, and it's this kind of breezy and clever blend of science and fart jokes. Like, this, oh, there is brilliant. So much. This is toilet humor out the wazoo, I'm telling you, which was quite a funny thing, because I wasn't sort of sure what I was expecting. And then I started reading. I'm like, oh, my lordy wordy. It's perfectly pitched for keen and reluctant readers because it's got both of those. There's a lot of sort of like, you know, you're sort of more advanced reader is going to pick up on a lot of the wordplay. There's some really interesting sort of like, you know, read between the lines jokes and that sort of stuff. And then there's also like so much just hilarious kind of, you know, stuff going on. There's facts in here. There's, you know, it's a really interesting blend. So Violet is a science genius. Her middle name is Butt. Can we just take a moment there? I kind of knew where we were right from that point when we discovered that. She's got a best friend called Izzy, who hasn't met a conspiracy theory that she doesn't believe. So there's this whole thing between, it's a really interesting play on, you know, what's just going on in the wider world of this sort of like, what are facts and can we believe facts and is there any data and are there any real mysteries left? Or, you know, as I said, there's a lot going on here. And there's also a talking hermit crab who really likes cheese, which might appeal to some people in your household.
Absolutely.
So it's sort of, as I said, it's a graphic novel. It's very clever, funny writing. And I'm just saying a lot of toilet humor. Like, just do not approach this if toilet humor is not for you, including fatbergs. There's fat. Do you know what a fatberg is?
I don't.
I'm not going to have that conversation here. I remember discovering, they find them. I remember watching a documentary once and they were in the New York sewers, which will give you an idea of where we are. And they started talking about fatbergs and they were showing us fat. And I was just, my mind was blown. Anyway, there's some fatberg stuff involved. And it also has some really interesting things to say about preoccupied parents on screens, which I really appreciated. Right. Anyway, I'm going to read you the back.
I need to get this one. I have a neighbor called Violet who's 8 and I have the smallest Spee and I can see that they would love reading this together.
I'm going to send this one to you because I can see it. I'd be really interested to know what the smallest Spee actually thinks of it. Anyway, I'll read you the back. Violet is a science genius. Izzy believes in aliens 110%. There's a whole discussion about whether you can have 110% or if it can only be 100. This is a conversation I have in my house regularly. And Leonardo da Vinci is a talking crab. Together, they're on a mission to save their school. Only today's the sort of day when anything could happen, including an outer space invasion and explosions. It's time to get down to business with some wacky science in a graphic novel that will leave you sitting on the edge of your toilet seat. Right there.
Right. So we're really going out there right from the start. There is no question that
there is no holding back. And I think that's probably what kids are going to love about it. There is absolutely no holding back. And it's funny. Like I'm sort of reading it as an adult and I can so appreciate what Christy has done with the writing here because it's very, very clever. All right, so that was Ultraviolet Down to Business by Christy Boone and Rebel Challenger. Now, we are having a complete change of pace with the next one. This one is called What Stars Are For, and it's a picture book by Margot Davis. And, oh my, Margot Davis, what did you do to me? This is the most beautiful book. The illustrations are just glorious. And the story, which is about a sweet, shy little snail with lots of questions, looking for a friend, has all of the feels, like so many. If you've ever heard me tell the story about the inspiration for the Mapmaker Chronicles series, about being out in my backyard looking at the stars with Book Boy, you know, thinking that this should be a moment he'll remember forever, you'll know. Spoiler, didn't quite turn out like that. You'll know that my thoughts on the power, you'll know my thoughts on the power of the stars. And this book just sums it all up. Like, it's gorgeous. It's highly recommended. And I would buy prints of some of the lows in this story, particularly the cover, which is absolutely stunning. I'll read you the back. Henry spends his nights exploring the world alone and wondering one thing, what are stars for? One morning, he decides to come out of his shell and ask someone. Can Henry find the answer to his question and make a friend? Look, you'll be on board with Henry. That's all I can say. You will be. It's a gentle and it's just stunning, beautiful. That was our book mail for this week.
Kelly McGee is desperate to reinvent herself for high school, but she's on a family holiday, there's a thief on the prowl, and Kelly's friend insists on walking into trouble. From best-selling author A.L. Tate comes a middle grade mystery about growing up, figuring things out, and solving the puzzle of who you are. Find out more at alisontate.com.
Okay, Megan Daly, it is time for our bingo question. And this week, our bingo is an author interview, and we are sharing 10 minutes, actually a few more, with Joel McCarro. Now, Joel McCarro is an award-winning writer, keynote speaker, creativity specialist, children's author, educator, and having performed for hundreds of thousands of people throughout the world, one of Australia's most successful performance poets. In his time, Joel has released 7 spoken word music albums, 6 published books of poetry, and he has just released his first junior fiction graphic novel, Urban Legend Hunters, with Larrikin House as publisher. And we had a bit of a chat about that. Welcome to Your Kids Next Read, Joel McCarro. It is an absolute pleasure to have you with us.
Oh, it's my joy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Joy. Yes, it is a joy, isn't it? Absolutely. I get so much joy out of these conversations.
Oh, all that's right. Good, because you've done lots of them. So it's good that you're getting joy out of them.
I know. I'm still getting joy, all the sparking joy with me all these years later. Mm. All right. We are here today to talk about Urban Legend Hunters, The Dreaded Mr. Snipe, which is your first graphic novel and the first in a new series. So tell us all about it.
So Urban Legend Hunters is one of the, it's a junior fiction, so it's kind of 7 to 13-year-old. And it's about, like at its heart, it's the heart of the plot of the story is an old wrinkly, cranky man who, as the urban legend goes, lives beside the school campsite. And when a football is kicked over the fence, he comes out screaming with his samurai sword and chops the ball in half. And should the rumors be true, perhaps even a kid or two, he slices and dices. So the urban legend might go. So there's three kind of main protagonists, Samantha Small, Jeremy Dubier, and Bad Boris. And they're sitting around a campfire telling, Jeremy Dubier is telling the urban legend of the dreaded Mr. Snipe. And so you have kind of an initial camp experience of ghost storytelling around a campfire. And then the next day, of course, Samantha Small kicks the ball over the fence and it all hell breaks loose from there. Yeah.
All right. Now, you're known as a poet, written performance, you know, all the poetry.
Yes.
Why did you decide your first novel for children would be a graphic novel rather than perhaps a verse novel, which is what people may have expected from you?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, in some ways, and maybe we can go into this in a bit, is like a lot of the language within it is very poetic. And so part of what I wanted to do, I absolutely love poetry and I've done it for many, many years. And I absolutely love graphic novels as well. And spent kind of in some ways what happened was I, over COVID, as I am in Melbourne. And so lockdown was absolute hell for a long time, but I had to make the most of it because I was parenting and homeschooling, et cetera, et cetera. And had been writing lots of poetry before that. And had just started to get into kind of writing junior fiction stuff before that. And then I had this time where I could actually really get in and write a story. And I was reading lots of graphic novels with my son. And it just kind of felt like the natural thing to do I love the storytelling element and the action part. Like I just love what graphic novels can do, and especially as well, like it had been something I'd been wanting to write for some time because I've spent a lot of time in high schools. A lot of the poetry work that I've done is in schools, and I would go into these libraries at lunchtime where I just had done poetry sessions with these kids who were like, no, we hate reading and we hate poetry. And then I'd go into the library and these same kids would be sitting there reading graphic novels and comic books. And I was like, you guys are like quite incredible.
Reading.
What I know, it's quite quite incredible what they do for reluctant readers.
Interesting.
So it all just kind of came together over COVID and I started writing this story and it started coming out as kind of graphic novel and also kind of poetry. And and here we are.
Where did the actual story start for you? So not the form of it or whatever, but the actual, you know, like Why Urban Legend Hunters?
So for this one, it actually was from a memory. A lot of my stories that I write are kind of based on a memory that has happened that I then pivot. I think it's one of our best places that we can kind of tap into both fiction, obviously non-fiction writing in terms of memoir-esque and reflective writing and poetry, but also fiction writing, I think, to take a memory from our lives and experience a little moment, an anecdote, and to pivot it. And so I remember I was in a plane and just had this random memory of kind of the old cranky man in the backyard at our back fence when I grew up, and us kids would have to dare each other who was going to go over the fence to rescue the ball, because if he saw you jumping over the fence, especially because he had a nice veggie patch, into the veggie patch to get the to get our balls, then he would come out yelling, not with a samurai sword, etc. But but my I had that memory, and I was like, oh, what if he, like, I mean, it's that pivotal question of the what if that takes you to the premise. What if he wasn't just a cranky old man, but was a, I don't know, an alien or a creature, some kind of urban legend creature dressed up as an angry old man, like, and that's where the story began. So the inspiration came from a little memory.
All right. So as you kind of touched on, there is a lot of gorgeous wordplay in the novel, yeah. particularly in those longer passages. And I can hear your performance poetry in the cadence as yeah. I read it. It's that sort of, you know, the stress words and all of that sort of stuff. Yeah. And you don't hold back on vocab and, in fact, revel in the vocab. Like there's a real sort of sense of how good are words. Like that's the kind of feeling I get from those passages. How good are words? Was that a conscious choice for this age group? Because it's a, you know, like you're certainly pushing the vocab, whereas a lot of the time in this sort of junior fiction end of things, we sort of end up with a simpler kind of vocab.
It was definitely a conscious choice. Part of it is, again, because I've done poetry work with schoolers, with high schoolers and upper primary for many, many years, I've kind of seen what poetry can work with that age group. And because my writing, I struggle to write non-poetically and lyrically with my writing. And so to bring in lots of alliteration and assonance and rhyming and the rhythmic schemes that I use, like all that kind of stuff, I wanted that, even though I love graphic novels, and this is probably the difference as well, is that so it kind of interweaves between narrative. There's narrative sections that then go into more the graphic novel style paneling that then weave back into the narrative sections. And the narrative sections are very much kind of lyrical, poetic in a junior fiction way. So they're funny in there, that kind of thing. But I mean, as you said, I love wordplay and I love what it can. I think kids reading this, they tap into the rhythm naturally, not even realizing that essentially they're reading poetry. And it kind of in some ways is, if I set it out slightly differently, it kind of those sections would be a verse novel. So in some ways it does tap into that. I love what just that rhythmic and poetic nature can do for kids without them even realizing. It's quite amazing.
Did you find, you know, as you say, you sort of struggle a little bit to not write poetically and lyrically and were the panels, were the dot, because obviously with a graphic novel, you've got the pictures, but you've also the dialogue is carrying an enormous amount of the story as the story unfolds. Were those sections challenging for you? Was the dialogue stuff challenging?
I don't know about challenging. I love, I think maybe because I had read a lot of graphic novels and, I mean, in some ways the graphic novel format is similar to kind of screenplay and TV format that you've just got dialogue and action and visuals. And I love watching movies and TV shows, et cetera, watch a lot of different stuff. And so I think it was... It's definitely a change of mode of thinking. I think I've played with it a little bit over the years. And so I think it's not that it didn't come naturally, but I was able to bring it out, I think, and work with it. A part of it is that we made one of the characters a storyteller in and of himself. Mm-hmm. So he's quite poetic and stuff in his dialogue, but it works. I think it works.
As a poet, you know, you're used to painting the whole picture with your words. The words are the thing and it's what brings the image to life. Whereas with the graphic, you know, aspect of this, you're having to actively learn to leave space for the pictures. Was that something that, I mean, obviously, as you say, it's got that, you know, TV screenplay feel to it, but was it something that you had to do within the editing or was it something that was kind of there for you from the start?
Yeah, I actually really loved that as well. I think because normally I'm trying to figure out the whole visual scene to go, oh, I can just, so the way that we did it in terms of setting it out was we've got the narration parts there, we've got dialogue from each kind of actor, as it kind of written out as a manuscript, like you would a screenplay in some sense. And then little illustrator notes scattered throughout. And so I worked on kind of the whole manuscript with illustrated notes scattered throughout that then went, once we'd signed off on the manuscript with the publisher, with Larrikin House, we then put it to our illustrator, Wayne Bryant, and the designer as well, Sarah Maurer, who they just did an exceptional job and really took it like, so I would just write, I don't know, Jeremy's standing before a campfire. That's the illustrator note. And then they just, to see it come alive and the way that these illustrators' brains works, it's amazing. Like, they're just so incredibly talented to take just a few words and go, ah, oh, this is the vision I'm seeing. These are the what the characters could look like. We worked on them and they brought together like a first draft chapter that we then signed off on and then went and did the whole thing first draft as the illustrations. But it was fantastic. So I think I wrote it with... If I hadn't have been able to write the illustrator notes, I would have struggled, but to go, this is what I'm thinking. And they changed it and added stuff and had great ideas for it. It was amazing. It was such a good process.
It's a very collaborative process, isn't it? As opposed to, you know, like, I guess, you know, working, you know, solo, writing your poetry that you're then going to perform yourself, et cetera.
Yeah.
Was that, did you get a lot of joy out of that collaborative process?
I did.
Oh, yeah. Back to joy. Fabulous.
Yeah, back to joy. How wonderful. I mean, I love, and even in my poetry and stuff, I love collaborative process. So I, even with my poems, I have a band that I work with, Joel McCarrow and the Mysterious Few. And so taking my words and working out how to perform them, then working with musicians to bring it all together. And then working as well, I've got a whole bunch of videos that I did with poetry. And so working with filmmakers, I love, if I can collaborate, I'm in.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, I love the collaborative process because I think it takes what I can do as just the words person and amplifies it and extends it. I think we should never be afraid of collaboration because I think it stretches me, it challenges me, it changes how I write. Collaborating with these guys was amazing.
Were you a fan of group projects at school, Joel, just out of interest?
Well, I don't think I was actually. Not at uni. I hated them at uni. Maybe I was a little more controlling back then of like, you little buggers who are so lazy you don't do anything. I think I'm a fan of collaboration if you're working with someone who is just as kind of passionate about what they're doing.
Absolutely. Because there's a lot of trust involved in it. Like you're really trusting, you know, people to catch you and also push you, aren't you? Like that's the key to great collaboration.
Yeah.
All right. So you actually work a lot and speak a lot in the area of, you know, creativity, this amorphous thing that we call creativity.
Yeah.
Have you got a couple of tips for our listeners about helping kids, you know, to expand or get in touch with or broaden their creativity?
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of work that I've done over years. So I've been going into schools for years doing poetry and now the junior fiction kind of author talks and presentations and all that kind of stuff. And I think one of the main things for kids is that they have, we know this, that school often sadly funnels kids into a particular way of thinking, which is great for some things and not amazing for others. And so I spend a lot of time when I go into schools just helping kids to break out of that way of thinking and just get to play with words. And I often talk about kind of the secret of writing good poetry is to stop trying to write good poetry, to allow yourself to write bad poetry. And so the more that I think we can encourage kids that first drafts are meant to be a playful, imaginative romp, that some of it will be bad and some of it will be great. I think And then we have something to work with. We have a page to work with rather than a blank page. But so I spend a lot of time. And so I suppose my encouragement would be that with young people to give them prompts and exercises where they don't feel the pressure of having to get it right. Taking it away from like assessment and things like that, if it's teachers. But just the simple act of having a piece of paper in front of you, the more we can help them not to freak out at that, but just to put some stuff down, a few words down, a few drawings down, and just to have a play, I think the better their creative work will be.
How do you spark, sorry, I'm excited, so excited, I'm losing my voice. How do you spark your own creativity on the days when you're not really feeling it? Because we don't feel it every day, and you are someone who relies on that creativity, you know, for your living. So how do you crack through them?
I force myself to until it comes back. So I have written a poem every day for the last 12 years of my life. Yeah. Is my creative practice, because I know that if I, and some of them are just like 2-line poems, then they don't have to be long, but I know that if I can bring something every day, then the pump is primed. Is that what we say? Is that the expression?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. Something like that. Like,
do you handwrite them? Do you have them in a Word document?
Sometimes I handwrite them, sometimes on my phone as I'm sitting on a train, in the notes section there. Sometimes I just, just wherever I can and whatever I'm doing, I'll get it out. And my other practice as well, is I also write a poem every week. I've done this for the last 8 years. I've written a poem every week for somebody and given it to them as a gift.
So do you feel pressure? Is there more pressure in writing the one that you're going to give as a gift? Like, do you feel like you have to get that right? Or is that more of a, this is from me to you and you should just love it anyway?
Well, I think that, regardless, they love it anyway, because no one receives it unless it's a bad love poem from your partner.
It's true.
No one really gives or receives poetry too much these days. And so to have a poem that is written for you, and often part of it for me is just listening to someone's story. I think listening is really important with our creativity, to learn how to listen at the level of what someone is saying, but also that deeper level that taps into kind of the thematic and the wrestle within their life. If we can tap into that, then, and craft something for them out of that, I've done it for so long that I don't feel the pressure now. I just kind of write whatever wants to come out, knowing that I'll come back to it and work on it and it'll be okay.
Listening is such an underrated skill for a writer, isn't it? I often talk in my own school talks about how several of my best ideas have come not from someone else's words, but from what has been sparked by listening to what someone else is talking about.
Totally. Yeah, totally. I think listening is, if not the most crucial practice in terms of finding inspiration, it's definitely up there.
Definitely.
Yeah, learning how to listen is very important.
All right, so now we're listening, because now we want to know what is next for Joel McCarrow.
Yeah, so the good news is Urban Legend Hunters isn't just one book, it's a series, which is super exciting. So I'm working with Larrikin House on the second book in the series, which is called The Hideous Mrs. Mortimer, of course it is. And then the third book, I've just started the first draft of the third book, which is called, will be something along, at the moment, it's The Grisly Ghost of Mary Throat. So we'll continue to go into kind of urban legend territory and play with, so the Hideous Mrs. Mortimer is kind of a swamp monster, lake monster creature, and then a ghost story after that. So we'll keep playing in urban legends, and I'm loving this mode of bringing together kind of the narrative interweaving with the graphic novel. I think it's quite a unique thing. There's not much of it around at all that looks like that, and so I'm going to keep playing on that with Urban Legend Hunters with Larrikin House. And I've got a whole lot of different other series as well, junior fiction series that I've been writing. I'm one of those obsessive weird people who has like 15 projects on the go at the same time. That's me. Yep. So I'll just keep on plugging away.
Fantastic. All right. Now, before we let you go, I'm going to ask you to recommend for our listeners a couple of books, or, you know, a book, or, you know, as many as you want, really, that you have read recently that you think, you know, they need to know about.
Yeah, totally. Well, maybe I'll go for one on the creepy side, which would be the Lockwood & Co., Jonathan Stroud.
Oh,
so
yes.
Just came out of the first book came out on Netflix that people might have seen, which they did a decent job of. It was pretty good. But the five, I just think the series just gets better and better. I think there's five in the series.
Yes. Alison Rushby is a huge fan of the series. And she's, she absolutely loves it.
Oh, I think it's brilliant. His other one, what's his other one called? Scarlet and Brown, I think, is his new series. And it's really brilliant too. It's fantastic too. But yeah, I love Lockwood & Co. in terms of, if you want some creepy, spooky kind of stories, ghost stories. And then in terms of graphic novels as well, let me give a recommendation for that. I love Jason Pament, is an Aussie guy who wrote Treasure in the Lake and just brought out Ember, Ian and was his latest one. Is fantastic. It's I really love his stuff. Also, Lightfall is a great series of graphic novels by I forget his name, an American author. But I'd highly recommend those two series. Absolutely.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for spending, well, more than 10 minutes with us today, Mr.
Sorry about that.
Joel. No, gosh, it's always my fault. I always talk too much. Where can people find out more about you and Urban Legend Hunters?
Absolutely. So joelmacero.com, MCKERROW, joelmacero.com is my website, and it has links to kind of everything that I do in terms of poetry and the novels and all that kind of stuff. So probably that's the easiest place.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much. All the best for the new series, and we look forward to seeing what other poetic and wonderful things you come up with.
Thanks for having me.
So, Megan Daly, from his website, Joel describes himself as being obsessed with story, creativity, and imagination, and the way they might just change everything. And I reckon, if you've had a listen to that interview, you would have to agree that that is a pretty good summary, wouldn't you say, Megan Daly?
Oh, absolutely. And if you've never seen Joel Macero perform, you must try and get yourself along to anything that he is at, because that passion he has for story, creativity, and imagination really comes through whenever he speaks, doesn't it? And
I think so, yeah. I really enjoyed the opportunity to have a talk with him about bringing out creativity in kids. And I think it's just that sort of idea of not being afraid. I think that's, you know, like it's that idea of having a go, not worrying about making mistakes. You know, I think if we could all kind of tap into that, and particularly, I don't know, I just feel like kids have just become so worried about, you know, doing the wrong thing, about, you know, making things perfect, and about, you know, not putting a foot wrong. And you can see it in creative writing classes. And it's like, this is just for you. Like, that's what I say to them. Like, this is for you. I'm not grading it. I'm not looking at it. This is all about you just, you know, downloading your brain and having a look at what's inside there. So, interesting. I really enjoyed the conversation.
Yeah, it was a great conversation. And I've got Joel coming to school in a couple of weeks. And I really do appreciate when he speaks to students, and you do this as well, when you speak to students, you do say all of those things. It's something that is just great for your soul. And I think it's really powerful to have accomplished people like Joel saying that to students.
Yeah.
Who's speaking absolutely. To our year 4s and our year 8s, but I'd really love the smallest B to get on board with some of the stuff that Joel talks about as well. The smallest B absolutely loved Urban Legend Hunters, which I think I spoke about a few weeks.
Yes, indeed. All right, so moving on to our quick tips for the week, and I've just got one quick tip, and it's a bit on the subject of, you know, buying prints and original artworks from children's book illustrators, as per my current Margot Davis obsession. Did you know that many illustrators actually sell them directly? As a starting point,
a bit of an obsession.
I know you do, but I'm speaking to our wider audience as well. So as a starting point, and this was just sort of like a bit of a quick kind of look around, Emma Key, Jess Ratcliffe, Friar James, Sarah Allen, Sammy Bailey, Gus Gordon, Anna Walker, all have prints, original artworks, and other things for sale via their online shops. And yes, Margot Davis also has a shop. I had a look, which features prints and a range of sewing patterns for some super cute stuffed animals, like really, really cute. So there's no prints from her latest book up there as yet, but I'm going to keep an eye on that. And I will put links in the show notes to all of those illustrators that I've already mentioned. Are there any others that you know of that you particularly?
Look, I have purchased a fair amount of Cheryl Orsini's.
Of course, yes.
As well. And I'm trying to think of the beautiful woman in Mullumbimby that does. Oh, my goodness. I'm having a total mental blank, but I'll put the link in the show notes.
Yes.
But, yeah, I adore buying illustrator artwork. It's something I've done for many, many years. And when we do finally move into our new house, and I'll show some pictures of what I do along the way, I love grouping all my little illustrator artworks together because, you know, they are small artworks, and I love doing an illustrator artwork wall, and I just think illustrator artwork is fabulous. I always talk to my students at school about, isn't it beautiful that illustrators have shared their work in a picture book when their work could be and should be, and sometimes is, hanging on the walls in art galleries. So I'm a big fan of buying original artworks and prints.
Fabulous. Mm. All right, what about your quick tips? What have you got for us?
I was going to share a guest post in the show notes by Lana Hallows on my website, megandaily.com.au. And it's about five things you should know about school libraries. This is from a parent caregiver perspective. And Lana interviewed me some time ago about five things that I wanted you as parents and caregivers to know about school libraries and teacher librarians. And I'll just go through that that post quickly. Number one, I see your child. Good teacher librarians get to know their students really well, and all school library staff. Mrs. Malta is the queen of getting to know students really well. You know, you get to know their quirks, their special interests, the fact that they like to hold a book up high to hide their face when they're reading, or that they might read upside down. Or it's really important. And we do very much get to know our students very, very well that come into the school library. Library lessons are not how we remember them. So when you're thinking about your little person at school being in the library for their library lesson, please don't think that they're sitting there quietly and reading. My own library lessons are cooperatively planned with classroom teachers. They're a mix of reading, research skills, book conventions, and literary goodness. But we use books, obviously. We use iPads. We use paper and pencil. I do lots of small world play. I do lots of making and creating. My library lessons are anything but quiet. People would have heard me say before, my library often feels like a rave party from the 90s. So always, if your child has library lessons, is lucky enough to have library lessons at school, don't assume that that is a lesson that it was like when you were at school. Number three, every kid is a reader. I encourage all of my students to find their individual reader identity, because there is a way into reading for all of us. Some children may read by ear with audiobooks. Some students will engage with stories in different ways to the way that you presume might be the traditional way to engage with stories. Some will exclusively read graphic novels. Some children will devour the classics. I know my 16-year-old at the moment is on a mission to buy a classic for one of her besties, who he's really obsessed with reading the classics, and is terribly devastated that my daughter doesn't read the classics. So, you know, every child can be a reader. That kid standing on the oval at soccer, playing soccer at lunchtime, they are also a reader, and they have an identity as a reader. So every child has an identity as a reader. And number four, library is not about overdues. I care very little about late returns, and most other school library staff will care less than you think about late library returns. Obviously, there is an issue with, you know, you don't want children to not be responsible with their books and taking care of them. And obviously, there's an issue with budgeting and getting resources back. But my biggest concern in life is a child being able to take a book home rather than overdues. And last but not least, school libraries are learning hubs. Contemporary libraries, which are staffed, are the hub, can and should be the hub of a primary or high school. They're a place where all members of the school community can come to access print and digital resources, attend meetings, hang out in a welcoming space. And like I said earlier, with every child needing an identity as a reader, every child in the school, every parent in the school should feel welcome in the library. And they're just five things that I think are really important to remember about your school, your child's school library.
Fabulous. I'd like to come and sit in your warm and welcoming school library. Mind you, I don't know about a 90s rave party. I don't know if I'm up for that anymore. Might be beyond it. All right. Well, moving forward into the week, I will be chugging ever onwards with my novel. And I'm also putting together the May Your Kids Next Read newsletter. There are books to win, people. So subscribe now at yourkidsnextread.substack.com. We do a book. I've been reading too much Ultraviolet. We do a big book mail giveaway every single month, and all you have to do for your chance to win is to be a subscriber to our free newsletter. So get in there. I'll put the link in the show notes. I've also, I'm feeling very proud. I've also organized the Substack homepage so that you can actually find what you're looking for. I have set up a navigation, you know, with some vaguely useful categories to help you sort of find what, you know, the kinds of posts and things that might interest you. So go and have a look and make me feel better about my efforts, okay? Like, just make me feel like I'm not wasting my time over here. What about you, Megan? What are you going to be doing?
Oh, look, the Beekeeper and I are really excited that there's a whole day musical theatre dress rehearsal, because when we drop the kids to musical theatre, if any of you know Brisbane, musical theatre is located in West End, and we like to then go and shop, do our grocery shopping at what we call fancy supermarket, which is Harris Farm, which is
It is fancy.
It's so fancy, and it makes us feel like we, for a moment, don't have children. Love you guys. But it's just so lovely to go to the fancy supermarket and feel like you're just one of the people, and we're not dressed in the lycra that the usual West End crew at Harris Farm are, but it's just super nice. So
do you just walk out with an avocado and a, you know, fancy yogurt?
Because I love buying the fancy yogurt, and the milk in the glass bottle makes me, just makes me feel like I'm back in my 20s and living my best life. And then I then see a carnival and remember that I have four children who I adore. But it's
I'll be over here with my 3 liters per of, you know, light milk. We go through so much milk, honestly, and it's not me. And it's not the builder. So therefore, it is the one other person. We saved a lot of milk when he had his overnight hike. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. All right. Where will we find you until we meet next time?
Fancy Supermarket and at megandaily.com.au and on Facebook and Instagram at Megan Daily Books.
And you'll find me at alisontait.com, alisontait.com. You'll find me on Facebook and Instagram at Alison Tait Writer, and you can see all of my excellent housekeeping efforts over on the Your Kids Next Read Substack. So go have a look, and we'll see you next time.
See you later.